Good afternoon and welcome to day four at Y 2025. This is Tent Cassiopeia, and you're probably all here because you're wondering, what can you do wrong if you buy a domain name and set it up? I mean, it's simple, right? Enter a few CNAMEs, do some DNS stuff, no biggie. I think there are quite a few pitfalls, and here to tell us all about in how not to configure your domain name is Benjamin. Please give him a very warm welcome.
Thanks. So this talk is how to configure or how not to configure name and using internet.nl to have some checks for you. So I'm Benjamin. This is my internal governmental profile with some confetti. We'll later see in the talk how they could have prevented the confetti part. So my daily work is for the Netherlands Standardization Forum, and we also have a village and a sponsor tent where I can be found, and we have some free t-shirts like the one I'm wearing if you score a double 100% for the email test and the website test. So more on that later. So more about my work. I work for the Standardization Forum, and we advise the government to, for example, make security.txt mandatory or RPKI mandatory for all governmental websites and host names to implement. That's kind of nice. And I do the governmental-wide reporting on all the assets we are aware of, which is pretty small. It's like 10,000-ish host names, or 12,000, I think. But there are way more, but we don't have a full registry of all the domain names. And we split that out by governmental level and ministry, and have some scoring, trying to improve the standardization compliancy of these host names. And we mainly use internet.nl. So this is internet.nl. I checked y2025.org. It scores pretty well. It scores 100%. So that's nice. But more on that later, because there are still some improvements, some errors. So more on that that later. So internet.nl is the tool by the Dutch Internet Standards Platform, and that's the organization behind the tool. And there are parties from the internet community and the Dutch government. For example, the .nl registry, SEDN, RIPE NCC, Economic Affairs, but also Internet Society, the Society of Registries, NLNet, NLNet Labs, and Forum Standardization, which I'm part of, and the Dutch Cloud Community. So it's kind of a broad platform that created this tool. And it's there to promote modern internet standards. What are modern internet standards? Well, IPv6, a modern address to further grow the internet. DNSSEC, signed domain for the integrity of the domain data. HTTPS, well, you all know that probably, but also the security headers on HTTP and security.txt, some mailing authentication marks like DMARC, DKIM, and SPF, and also the transport security for your email with StarTLS and DANE, and also routing security with RPKI. So let's dive into these standards one by one. First, we have IPv6. It's quite an old RFC. It's in the thousands. It's the Internet Protocol version 6. And it's mainly just a quad A record. And you can easily set it up by just having your hostname curl IP dot what the fuck, and have your IPv6 and configure it. Sadly, for example, other tools like ipinfo.io doesn't even have a quad A record. And you might want to configure a more static IPv6 address for your hostname. Also, Please don't use IPv4 mapped as IPv6 addresses. Some users did that to trick internet.nl to make like a quad A record with FFFF and then your IPv4 address, which is an IPv6 address, but it's of course translated to IPv4. That's not nice. That doesn't give us anything. So that doesn't count. So why you should really do IPv6? Well, because of reputation and blocking. IPv4 is when you have like a carrier grade net, for example, used by Vodafone Ziggo for their landlines. If you want to block any IP, you will impact lots of users. So probably if you ever want to block any IP, you should support IPv6, because otherwise you have to the problem of the security, like, okay, this IP address is really annoying, but I know there are like lots of users behind it, so I don't want to block it, but I should because of security considerations. But if you then have IPv6, you can block the IPv4 with multiple users behind it, because the user will still be able to access you. The individual users will still be able to access you via IPv4, IPv6. So, and please monitor your uptime and make sure your uptime and cert monitoring tools also support IPv6 and do IPv6. Not all tools do that. For example, Google. We had an issue once where somebody on X said, like, is internet.nl wrong, or is the Google IPv6 mail server space down? The case was, of course, the Google IPv6 mail space was down. So please make sure your monitoring tools do IPv6, because internet.nl is not your uptime monitoring tool. Yeah, it can be, but it shouldn't. So more about IPv6, some privacy issues. Please make sure you don't leak a MAC address. Like if you see FFFE in your IPv6 address, there could be a MAC address behind that, and that would leak your vendor of your MAC address your machine used. Internet.nl does check for that on your connection test. It doesn't do that for the host names, for the server names, because it thinks, well, doesn't really care there. But if you have a home server, you might do care, so please notice that. Some common issues we see is that the IPv6 address is working, but doesn't have the same open ports. For example, your IPv4 is having the open ports 80 and 443, but then your IPv6 only has 443. So we count that also as a mismatch. We also see different contents on IPv6 and IPv4. Sometimes people just add the IPv6, but then don't listen for that on with their web server and just serve some Nginx or Apache dummy there. So we also, internet.nl also checks for that. And there was a talk about IPv6 yesterday, probably recommended to see that. And yeah, there are only 4 billion IPv4 addresses, minus quite some reserve space, and it's not enough, and net to net is really a pain. So not having IPv6 is not really inclusive. Lots of people, especially not in Europe, don't even have IPv4 space, so please add an IPv6 address to your machines. And IPv6 is now almost 30 years old, so maybe older than some of you here. So it's not a new standard. It should be implemented. And some countries are phasing out IPv4, like the Czech Republic. I think they have an end date at 2030 or 32, something. And we now see on conferences like RIPE that they run mostly IPv6 local networks or Wi-Fi networks. So that's the thing now. So also consider, if you're setting up your local network, maybe do that mostly IPv6. That kind of skips the burden of having a dual stack. So then something about DNSSEC. That's RFC 4033, but there are quite some more to implement this. So it stands for Domain Name Security Extensions. The problem is plain DNS is just an UDP package from a random source port, which has some 64K possibilities to port 53, and it can be spoofed by just sending 64,000 packages. So you do want to have DNSSEC to, it's kind of more of advanced attacks if somebody tries to spoof your DNS, but it can be done. And DNSSEC is almost supported by all DNS providers, and it sometimes already is enabled, but you just need to set a DS record at your domain registry. So most of the time it's just doing a checkbox and setting the DS record. And not doing DNSSEC in 2025, this one, MasterCard. Does anyone know the issue in this response here? Did anyone see this one? There's indeed a missing T here. So somebody missed a letter on their keyboard and for the last entry, and they didn't type the T, and .ne stands for the TLD of Niger, and this domain name was free, and it was registered, and there were somebody set up a DNS server, and there were queries coming in. And this was MasterCard. So they even found out it was owned by some, it was registered before by some Russian entity. So you really want, sorry? You really want to set up DNSSEC also to, if they would have had DNSSEC, they would have, this wouldn't have worked. At least not for DNSSEC validating resolvers, of course. So if you do a DNSSEC query, you will see the RA, that means it's authenticated, and you will also see the RRSIG, which is actually the signature of the DNSSEC. And these two yellow marked things, are the lifetime of the signature. So you can check yourself, check your own DNSSEC. Is my lifetime still valid? Is it the first one is the start, the second one is the start. And what we mainly see with internet.nl has a hard expire. But some resolvers, unbound resolvers, they allow like a 10% drift of the lifetime for the signature. So your resolver could still work, but it would still be read on internet.nl. But also, for example, a public resolver like Google also has a hard cutoff date. So if it's expired, it's expired. No 10% bonus that Unbound gives you. And a lot of times we see that the Apex, the main domain, is valid, but the subdomain is not. Why is that? Well, we do a start of authority request. And sometimes for the www, that request isn't, the SOA isn't there, and we get like an invalid or expired NSEC. That's one of the main issues. Another thing is people like to use CNAMEs. If you do CNAMEs, the whole chain needs to be valid. So if you CNAME out, that record also needs to have a valid DNSSEC, and internet.nl will check the complete chain. So, but more on CNAMEs. If you do this, which we see quite often, now if your Apex has an MX, now your WWW has an MX record too, because you CNAME to your Apex, right? So this is not really advised in general. Yeah, don't do this. And more on CNAMEs, if you, for example, send your sub to a remote service, the remote service can run anything, they can return anything they want. They can return MX records for this, so they can receive mail on your sub.example.org. they might not send a TXT SPF. So if you send it out, it's all to the remote service to do whatever it wants with the DNS responses for that. And yeah, think wisely about doing that. Really have trust in the remote service sending the correct responses. Yeah, we mainly see like this is used for just web server stuff and they only return a A and a quad A, but then don't send an SPF, and then it could be used for spoofing. What's SPF? SPF stands for Sender Policy Framework for authorizing use of the domain names in email. Version 1, we're still at version 1. What is it? Well, it mainly is a DNS TXT record. A typical record is version SPF 1, MX, tilde all. It means only allow mail from the MX and have a soft fill. If you also want to have A and quad A support, you can just add a single A, that doubles. And if you don't want to do any mail, then just do SPF minus all. It will not allow any mail. The common issues we see here, you need to configure SPF on each hostname. So not only your top level, we mostly see this implemented on the top levels, but not on your www or not on your whatever .example.org. And we also see lots of includes, mainly too much includes, because you can have the maximum of 10 lookups. And if you include some remote service, yeah, it's up to you to know that remote service don't change their SPF records or have some extra includes. And it might be okay today, but it might not be okay tomorrow. And yeah, if they are not managed by you, I really advise you to monitor the amount of includes. You can do this, for example, with SPF Trace. It's a really nice tool where we will probably implement at internet.nl, because SPF is really complex in a sense that even the counting of the lookups, we made, I don't know, 20 errors here. The people from SPF Trace also made some errors here and some misinterpretation of the SPF RFC, but they traced it all down to mailing list, lots of knowledge, and they have some nice Rust tool that will graph out your complete includes. I did this intentionally for internet.nl because it's small. If you do this for some other domain, I don't know, overheid.nl or mijn.overheid.nl, it will give you 9 includes. It will be, well, 2 terminals long. So I couldn't include it on this slide. So this is the one I could include. And this is a really nice tool to use for this. So then we have DKIM, RFC 6376. It's domain key identified email, and it mainly means if you sign your email, if your email server signs your email, that it can be checked by the receiving server. And you do that by placing a selector domain key in your under your domain with a public key in there. We cannot know your selector because we don't ask for that. So we still know by doing this, by checking your domain key example.com, .org. And if it returns no error, we know there's something below it. If it returns NX domain, it shouldn't have something below it. We still see some DNS servers that say, well, it's an NX domain, but we have something below it. That is not in spec. Your DNS server is wrong. Very wrong. So there's a really nice RFC. It's pretty small, and I could even put the abstract completely in it. So RFC 8020, NX domains means there is really nothing underneath. So they have some clarification that the resolver, when it receives an NX domain, it really means all and all the names under it do not exist. But we still see quite some DNS servers that don't do this. And then people complain like, I have DKIM set up, but internet doesn't know, says I don't. Well, then you're not, your DNS server is not compliant with quite some old RFCs, because I think it already was in an RFC 1000 or 2000 series. That, but this one, the 8020, clarifies it that there shouldn't be anything underneath it. So when we have DKIM and SPF, there's DMARC that says, well, you really should enforce SPF or DKIM. So it stands for Domain-Based Message Authentication Reporting and Conformance. So if you have a DMARC can be set up by underscore DMARC records, TXT records, which starts with V is DMARC, and then a policy, for example, reject. You have reject, quarantine, and none. And it should be on the top domain, but it could be overridden by lower host names. But it still only means SPF or DKIM. It doesn't mean AND. So that's thing of the pain of DMARC, I think. And yeah, we mainly see issues like people setting P as none. That still does nothing. So you can have this very nice DMARC record, but it does nothing. And we also see stuff like when you have a RURA or a RUF that's for reporting and you do it to some third party, the third party should have the authentication setup, and the setup is done by having that third party having your domain name, a DNS record for that, which ends with vdmarc1 semicolon. And the semicolon is mostly the problem. Or setting up this record is a problem, and then if it's set up, not using the semicolon. Because the RFC is actually slightly, they have an example without semicolon. While in the actually ABNF, the abstract Bauer-Naur form, I think, there should be a semicolon. So you should use a semicolon. It's some errata for this, and they clarified it. But yeah, since erratas are not by default shown in the RFC editors, yeah, please put a semicolon. Or test it on internet.nl. It will tell you so. For example, with this record from y2025.org, they have some RURA and RUF for mch2021.org, but they don't have any record for this, so they should have set up this TT record in yellow below with a semicolon. But it also quite often happens that you don't have any email at all, and then you can use the, if you don't want any mail or MX, you have RFC 7505, that's a null MX. And what a null MX is yeah, just an MX record, priority null, and then dot as the domain name. And that will say, we don't have any incoming email server. Because if you don't have an MX, you might think, well, there's no MX, right? But the fallback for having no MX is the A or the quad A. So that's also the problem with pointing stuff to external IP addresses. If you set up an A or a quad A to some external IP, by default, that domain can receive email. Except if you set up this null MX record. So if you're sending your A record to some external IP, which you don't manage, you might want to set up a null MX for that, and also an SPF minus all, so that domain cannot email. So instead of CNAME, do a A with a quad A, a null MX, and a TXT SPF min all. So then there's DANE, which stands for DNS-based authentication of named entities and the transport layer security TLS protocol TLSA. That's RFC 6698 and quite some more actually. And what is it? It forces actually to use start TLS for MX for your mail exchange. It prevents the man-in-the-middle attack like the strip TLS. Does that happen? Yes, it does happen. There's actually a public report about this, about the Czech government. Their email servers got man-in-the-middled, and some other entity stripped their TLS, and they could read their messages. So it's not hypothetical. It happens. Of course, it happens with people who are able to put some machine in between your machine, but this could happen. So set up a record for that, especially for email, by doing the port name of the port name for SMTP is 25, and the protocol is TCP. So you do underscore 25 dot underscore TCP dot your MX name. So in this case, example.org, but it might also be mailserver.example.org. And then you have three numbers, and then the hash of the certificate. I will go into that a bit more. So the first number means what kind of trust should be seen. Is it a trust anchor, for example, about the intermediate certificate or a root certificate? In the case of 0 and 2, that's about a trust anchor, so something above your certificate in the chain. And the 0 and the 1 also implies CA trust, so having a certificate by public CA. If you use the 2 or the 3, you say, well, whatever CAs, I put trust in this anchor or this entity. So 1 and 3 are about the end certificate. So mostly you want to set up a 3, and then as a fallback, maybe a 2 on your intermediate certificate. The second number is it about the full certificate binary, or is it about the subject public key info? 0 or 1. We mainly advise a 1 here. It's a bit more stable than the 0. But we don't judge. You can do anything you want here. And the last one is the complete content, or is it the hash? SHA-2 or SHA-512. We mainly advise SHA-2 here. It's shorter. The 0 is really long. It's your complete certificate. And if you choose on the previous one the full certificate, then you should. If you do 300, you need to put in your complete certificate, which is quite long. But if you do a 1 or a 2 here, it's just a hash. The 1 is the SHA-2 hash, which is secure enough. So we advise you to do a 311. The common issues are, they need DNSSEC. Otherwise, it's it kind of needs it. We also see people like, we really like the checkbox on internet.nl, so we will set up this DNSSEC record. Not automating the setup of the DNSSEC record, but do automating the certificate renewal. That's a pain. It's very painful because, your mailing will stop. So if you think like, my email box is getting quiet, do you have DNSSEC monitored? And if you have DNSSEC monitored sending an email to you, that might not work if the sending of the email checks your DNSSEC record. So really have some monitoring here. And please set up a roll over or fallback DNSSEC record. So you can do that by both setting up a 311 and a 211, for example, on the intermediate. So if you do a renewal on the same with the same CA, you won't have an issue. And you probably also want to do TLS reporting for this, so you know what goes wrong. And MTA STA is really not advised. Also not combining these two, because the it gets kind of complicated. Because what should you trust now? Should you trust what if the DNSSEC is correct, but MTA STA is not? And I also heard from some governmental parties that they phased out the MTA STA and they changed their certificate stuff. But then there was still some cache on the MTA STS. So yeah, there's a lifetime there. So you can remove your MTA STS, but you have to know like what was my max time there and is it really gone now? So if you have these two setups, it complicates a lot. And MTA STA also forces you to host a web server to do something with email. So it's quite a bit more complex setup. And it was, I think, only invented by Microsoft and Google to not have to do DNSSEC. So, because they find it a bit complicating because they have quite a large infrastructure and they did some strange stuff with jumbo zones and yeah, they had some issues implementing DNSSEC. Microsoft recently is starting to do that. I think the Microsoft Online Exchange does it now. And I think Azure DNS is also going to do it pretty soon. Although, definitely no vendor recommendation here. It's still American. So what's next? HSTS, so RFC 6797. So this is about your HTTP traffic, right? So it will say in a over, it's about strict transport security. You should only serve it on your TLS traffic, not on your plain HTTP traffic. That does nothing there. Yeah, you should give it some nice length, for example, a year. And it will force the user to go to the HTTPS straight away. And it will also make it impossible for the user to skip any certificate errors, expiries, warnings. So if they are being man-in-the-middled in some random Wi-Fi spot and they have your domain name in the HSTS cache, they won't be able to skip it. So you're really, it's really impossible to man the machine your domain. It's getting slightly less interesting because the browsers nowadays start to doing HTTPS first, but it's still security improvement if you do this because the HTTPS first could be blocked by the man in the machine middle stuff. So don't do that. Set up this. We also see lots of preload here. If you do preload, you should do it on your Apex and not on a subdomain. It will only put it in there if you do it on your Apex, and then you need to submit it to the HSTS preload.org run by Google. If you don't do that, nothing happens. And we see lots of preloads where yeah, they do it on sub-host names while not on their Apex, doesn't work. Or they do it on their Apex, but they don't submit their site, doesn't work. So we see lots of ineffective preloads. It's a bit of a shame. And you should also do the HTTPS redirect correctly. So, for example, if you want to redirect www.example.org to example.com, you should first upgrade to HTTPS on the same domain, and then on that request serve your HSTS, so the user will get it in their HTTPS cache. And then you can redirect the secure domain to the other secure domain. We see lots of times that people are doing incorrectly, also on the same domain. So, example, they run their they redirect their www.example.org to example.org straight away without upgrading to HTTPS first. The problem is the HTTPS cache will never land for the www. If people have that bookmarked, it will be still be possible to man in the middle because, yeah, there's no HSTS cache for that. So please do the redirect correctly. It took me quite a while to understand it. This first, I first thought before I was working for the government and for internet.nl, like, why are they requiring this? This is annoying. I want to redirect straight away. Well, this is why. Then another thing, content security policy. This one probably would have prevented the first screen you saw about my internal governmental confetti I have. they didn't have a content security policy set up. This is probably, this will prevent most of the cross-site scripting, which is most of the hacking, defacement being done, right? So if you take away anything, please implement a content security policy. I would say this is the most important thing next to the mailing stuff to just set up a null MX and SPF minus all to really set up a content security policy so it won't be able to put some load some external scripts into your website if you miss some escaping somewhere. So this really locks it down. And this is an example we run on internet.nl. It's kind of a lockdown version. It will only allow internet.nl scripts and nothing else. I really advise you to do this. It really helps a lot. Also, why 2025 didn't do this, which is a shame. But it's a bit harder if you run, for example, wiki software. I think MediaWiki doesn't have a nice SPF out of the box, so you need to tweak that a bit and get it working. So another thing is you should reject other hostnames. I could set up a domain name and point it to your IP addresses, and you probably want to have a TLS reject for that. So in Nginx, this is the Nginx config. The Apache config is a bit more complicated. In Nginx, you can just create like a default server that will listen for all these the IPv4, IPv6, the SSL, the QUIC, everything, and will return the TLS error, handshake error. So it just stops there. And you should also still return some 404 for some strange stuff if they don't send SNE stuff. So then security.txt, that's a standard. Also, I forgot to mention the RFC. I think it's 9011, I don't know. It says, well, we have a .wellknown/security.txt, and you should put some expiry in there. The expiry should be something next year, so we know it's still fresh. And you could put in your preferred languages, which you can be reachable with, and then some context stuff. The context stuff can be anything. It can be any URL, and it should be secure. People sometimes use here forms here, like they have some nice form setup. That's okay. You can put another contact below that, which has a lower priority, but there should be an email address somewhere, please. Because all the automation, if they find a vulnerability, they can automate the sending of an email. They cannot automate the filling in the form and the Google reCAPTCHA and whatever you put up on that URL, they won't know. But if you just put in some email address, it can be used to automatically warn you about vulnerabilities you have on your website. So then there's something we don't check yet, but you should really do is please use these prefixes for your cookies. __host- and __secure- because the host one, it means it must be set with a secure flag and from a secure page. Otherwise, if you still mix up something that you didn't, if somebody middle machines you, and they are able to serve some something over HTTP because you didn't set up HSCS, they could set up a cookie that could be reused later by the attacker and by the victim, and that's a problem. So that's why you really want to use the host one, or even better, the secure one, which also pinpoints it to the subdomain or the domain. So if you have a vulnerability on, for example, digiday.nl, the Apex DigiDay.nl and the www.digiday.nl are completely different things. The one is the login, the other is some consumer information thing. So you really want to have the cookies, have the secure one. So if one of them, for example, if the information thing about DigiDay is owned, they have nothing with the cookies. They cannot set any cookie that's influential for the Apex domain. So that's really advised to do. We don't check for this yet. We will someday. It's really advised. Although, of course, there are still valid cases not to do this. For example, if you just only store some language preference or some team preference, then it's fine. But if you do something with tokens, logins, please use one of these. Then we have some tech support sessions from 0 to 100% internet.nl score. Bring your own domain name. It will be today at 4 and tomorrow at 1. And the location is the Village Tent NL Golf Hackers. And if you score double 100% on your web and on your email, you will get a t-shirt. I bought some limited t-shirts, like I think 19, mainly L, some XL, some M. So they're, I think, also the last one in stock with this design, because we're working on a new web design. So come if you like and get a t-shirt, or we will help you with making sure your domain name will score 100% on internet.nl. So we're located at the NL Golf Hackers, the tent, and some URLs, the testing tools internet.nl. Our code is still on GitHub and below the Internet Standards Organization. And you can run it yourself within minutes with Dockers, and issues and PRs are totally welcome. The funny thing is we only did the Docker thing, I think, one and a half year ago. We still need to wait for some Docker releases because they still had some issues internally with IPv6, and we wanted to do some IPv6 checking from the containers. So IPv6 support is still, after 30 years, not globally around. But that was it.
Thank you, Benjamin. Do we have questions? If you have a question, please raise your hand. I will bring the microphone to you so we have you on recording. Over there.
Hi, you were warning about using a Dane record because you could have no email anymore. This is exactly, if you read online, you get scared. Well, I read a little bit more about it, and I found out that it's possible to renew your certificate, also your Let's Encrypt, with the reuse key flag. And since then, everything went all right. So it's not so frightening if you use the reuse key thing.
Yeah, totally. You're totally right about Dane. So is it scary? Yes and no. You can do it correctly, you can do it incorrectly. But the mainly thing is, please, if you do automatic renewals, please know what you're doing. And know what you're doing means either keep the key the same, although this is not advised to keep the key the same. But it's possible. You can also not renew with Dane, because if you do Dane with the tree, then it means, well, it can be expired. It's also valid. But that's why I said, know what you're doing with renewal. You can also disable renewing. That is also fine. You can let your key expire because you have Dane. It's no problem. Or at least it's no problem for the mail server supporting Dane. So, probably you want a key that's not expired, and then you need to renew. Then you could use reuse key. You could also, if you have a rollover key, some tooling support that's already put the rollover in your Dane. That's also fine. Yeah, totally correct. But you need to know what you're doing.
Hi, thanks for the talk. I have a question regarding DNSSEC. I have some domains that I manage like with different providers, but for example, some I have with Namecheap, and they don't support DNSSEC on .eu, apparently also not with .nl. I think also my DNS hoster, which is DigitalOcean, also doesn't support DNSSEC. So like on all of the sites, DNSSEC just is not available for me. It's like, do you recommend them just like moving both to like a different hoster that does explicitly support DNSSEC, or like what can I do like as
so,
a...
So the problem is that if you register your domain name, you cannot set up the DS record for the domain name, you mean?
Wait.
He said Namecheap says it's not available. Okay, for these special for these .eu and .nl. Okay, I will look into it. I thought that yeah, Namecheap supported it, but maybe not for some TLDs. That's interesting. There are also some TLDs which don't have DNSSEC at all. The nice example used to be .ai, which became very popular, but didn't have DNSSEC. They do now, but there are still quite some TLDs that don't have any DNSSEC at all. So yeah, if you pick some very nice vanity TLD, you might not be able to set up DNSSEC. But I really advise you also to maybe stick with a TLD that has a nice jurisdiction. So yeah, maybe something European or where you're based, or at least accept the risk if you're doing a .li, that's Libya. And well, the government might not be that stable there if that you wished.
Hello, thank you for the talk. This is very far away from my comfort zone, so sorry if this is a stupid question, but imagine a hacker obtains your, a criminal obtains access to, for example, Strato, and he gains the keys you were talking about earlier. Can he sign emails then? Using those
about I think you're saying the DKIM keys.
Sorry?
I think you're talking about domain keys then. Domain
yes.
Domain name keys for
yes.
Signing email. If the private keys of those are not in the DNS, that's just the public keys. The private keys are at the mail SMTP server that sends out a mail. Most of the time they are protected. There are some more things about domain keys. It mainly was used for to prevent spoofing. But the problem nowadays is if you don't rotate and make the private keys actually public after you use them, your leaked emails, for example, that happened with the Democratic Party leaks, their emails leaked and they still had their domain keys. They didn't rotate. I think they were from Google and Google didn't rotate those. You can say, well, this message was not altered and we kind of know because Google signed it and the private key is not yet public. So that's one consideration, but private keys normally is in the SMTP server. It should be kept secure. If your private keys of your leak, then you have a problem. Yeah, anyway.
Okay, so thank you so much for hosting the internet.nl. I'm using it on a regular basis. It's really cool. I was wondering, are you also having any plans for adding checks for outgoing email? So for example, is the DKIM header set properly? Is your outgoing outgoing SMTP server actually validating those DNS records? That's kind of checks.
Yeah, there were some efforts to do that, but they're a bit on hold at the moment. PRs are still welcome, but they should be maintainable. But we do link to some other tools, for example, HostTest. Emailtester.com or something. There are some tools who will test also quite some stuff, and we try to link to all of them. And if you miss something in our frequently asked questions, one of those tools or at the sidebar of the website, please let us know. We will add it if it's not really extremely commercial or something like that.
Hi, just for the gentleman that was using Namecheap, there's a number of non-commercial DNS hosters, including DSEC in Germany and Surfail, and you can point your Namecheap shitty cheap stuff to them. They can do DNSSEC and do the whole shebang, and they're community run, so I would warmly recommend that.
find each other afterwards.
Yeah, that's really a good recommendation for a DNS server. Yeah. Right.
Well, we're out of time, so please give another very warm round of applause. Benjamin, thank you very much.